2024 to order. I am the DOS Commission President, Janet Spears. This commission meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of the Brown Act. As noted on the agenda, members of the public may observe this meeting via sfgovtv.org and sfgovtv channel 78, and they may offer public comment by calling the published public comment phone number. I'd like to welcome the members of the public and staff who are watching us on sfgovtv. To eliminate background interference, all panelists and presenters that are presenting via WebEx are asked to mute themselves when not speaking or waiting to present. The San Francisco HSA DOS Commission acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homelands. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First People. Secretary, will you please take the roll?
Good morning, and thank you, President Spears. Commissioners, please respond with present when I call your name. President Janet Y. Spears.
Present.
Vice President Nelson Lum.
Present.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner.
Present.
Commissioner Wanda Jung.
Present.
Commissioner Martha Knutson.
Present.
Commissioner Barbara Sklars has an excused absence. And Commissioner Linda Parker Pennington.
Present.
And DOS Executive Director Kelly Dearman.
Present.
Thank you, President Spears. We have a quorum. Commissioners, the next item three, is communications. We'd like to provide further instructions for the public comment process. Public comment will be available on each item on this agenda and during general public comment. Both channel 78 and sfgovtv.org are streaming the numbers across the screen. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Comments or opportunities to speak during the public comment period are available via phone call. During each public comment period, viewers and callers will be instructed to call 1-415-655-0001, access code 2664-022-5261, pound, and then pound again. When connected, you'll hear the meeting discussions, but you will be muted and in listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up, dial star 3 to be added to the speaker line. Best practices are to call from a quiet location, speak clearly and slowly, and turn down your television or radio. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. You will be informed by the moderator when you have 30 seconds left. After 30 seconds, you'll be muted and placed back to listening mode. Alternatively, public comment can be submitted by email to ravi.derbige@sfgov.org. If you submit public comment via email, it'll be forwarded to the commission and will be included as part of the official docket. Are any other communications from the DOS Commission members? Nope. Thank you.
Commissioners, your next item is agenda item 4, approving the minutes of the Wednesday, September 4th, 2024 DOS Commission meetings. Are there any comments or questions from the commission regarding the Wednesday, September 4th, 2024 DOS Commission meeting minutes? Secretary, do we have anyone from the public who wishes to comment on the minutes?
Do we have anyone from the public who wishes to comment? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their request. Moderator, do we have any callers in the queue? There are no callers. Thank you very much.
Hearing no further requests to speak on this item, is there a motion to approve the Wednesday, September 4th, 2024 DOS Commission meeting minutes?
So moved.
So it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Secretary, will you please take a roll call vote to approve the minutes of September 4th, 2024?
President Janet Y. Spears, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Nelson Lum, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Martha Knutson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Wanda Jung, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Commissioner Linda Parker Pennington, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thanks. We have a unanimous vote.
Thank you. Commissioners, item 5 is the Executive Director's Report, presented by the DOS Executive Director, Kelly Dearman. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much, President Spears. Good morning to all of you, and stay hydrated. So on the state level, September 30th was the last day for the governor to sign any bills. The general rule is that if there was no major funding attached to it, then he said yes. If there was major funding attached to it, he vetoed it. And that's in response to our current budget woes. One that he did sign was SB 1249. And that has to do with updating the language around the Older Californians Act. So as you all know, California's demographic shift towards an older, more diverse population requires statewide systems and local structures to offer and integrate social, medical, cognitive, and behavioral health supports, respond to the needs of a growing number of older adults, people with disabilities, and family caregivers, and to affirm the important values of equity, inclusion, and belonging. So in an effort to prepare for this shift, the California Department of Aging is undergoing an effort to future-ready the state's aging network for changes in consumer, community, and payer needs and expectations. So you all will recall that this work first started with the governor's master plan for aging, and since then, the department has been guided by recommendations from CA 2030 project and the new direction in the Administration for Community Living final Older Americans Act rule, and now SB 1249. CDA is working really closely with C4A, which is the California Association of Area Agencies on Aging. And so we are currently participating, we San Francisco are currently participating in a survey to help guide this really important work. And as we get closer to a finish line or more involved in what is this going to look like, they are looking across the state to make sure all the AAA designations make sense. They are looking at the core programs and services that we do across the state. This idea that no matter where you are in the state, there are some programs that every AAA or PSA should provide. So we're just trying to get some agreement around that. And then they're also looking at the formula for handing out the money. We are really lucky here in San Francisco because we are in a city and county that that really cares about older adults and people with disabilities and their families and veterans and their caregivers. And so we get and thank you to everyone who worked on the Dignity Fund. I see you there, Marie. So we are able to get additional dollars, but there are many counties throughout the state who only get their dollars from the state. And as you can imagine, that's not a huge amount, so they're not able to provide the same amount of services. So I will update you as this moves along. This process is gonna take a little while. Also, want to let you know that because we are having our 2 days of summer, we are doing wellness calls to our most vulnerable folks and making sure they're okay and staying hydrated. We also have provided messaging to all of our CBOs to make sure we're all on the same page. And if you receive Alert SF, you know the city is really making an effort to make sure that everyone is aware that it's hot and to make sure, you know, that they know where to go if they need additional help. Lastly, on Tuesday, October 8th, California's Department of Aging is hosting an in-person and virtual day of action in Sacramento. This event brings together consumers, leaders in the fields of aging and disability services, as well as policymakers. During the event, the progress that has been made on the Master Plan for Aging will be highlighted and celebrated, and the event will also provide an opportunity for attendees to renew their commitment to advancing the 5 bold goals of the Master Plan on Aging. So the event's going to be held at the Convention Center in Sacramento. And even though in-person attendance is currently at capacity. If there are commissioners who are not registered but would like to attend and participate, they can still register to attend via Zoom at the event's website, and I'll make sure Robbie gets that information to you. There, we do have several DOS staff who will be in attendance. And I think that's all I have for today.
And the commissioners. Thank you. Thank you very much for that report. And I love the state and local, and then I'll call it a view of what's happening. You're up, Robbie.
Ready to move on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There we are. Commissioners, item six is the DOS employee recognition. Executive Director Dierman, President Spears, and the DOS Commission will honor the DOS October 2024 Employee of the Month, Zequin Lee, who is a program analyst for the Office of Community Partnerships at DOS.
The Department of Disability and Aging Services is thrilled to recognize Zequin Lee as our October 2024 Employee of the Month. Zequin, a dedicated program analyst at the DOS Office of Community Partnerships, has demonstrated outstanding leadership and dedication in her role. As the DOS lead analyst for the Community Living Fund and its groundbreaking expansion into the CalAIM programs of enhanced case management and community supports, Zequin has been instrumental in strengthening vital services. Her work with the San Francisco Health Plan to provide Medi-Cal covered community-based services highlights her incredible ability to collaborate across multiple DOS units, the city's Department of Public Health, various community-based organizations, and a new technology company that's developing a custom database to streamline referrals and enrollment. Her impact doesn't stop there. In addition to her core responsibilities, she goes above and beyond by managing our housing subsidy programs, providing housing stability to hundreds of households each month through rental subsidies. She also leads coordination efforts for our naturalization providers, helping DOS clients navigate the life-changing process of becoming American citizens. Zequin's leadership extends to supervising fellow analysts and supporting the Family Caregiver Support Program and the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program with the same grace, expertise, and dedication. Since joining OCP from a community-based organization, she has brought a vibrant curiosity and a can-do attitude to her work, tackling complex challenges with remarkable success. Her eagerness to ask questions and dive deep into new topics reflects her commitment to continual learning and excellence. Her calm and methodical approach to adapting to unexpected changes has ensured that any shifts are seamlessly integrated into her plans, all while maintaining an unwavering sense of professionalism and kindness. She fosters an environment where everyone feels valued, heard, and supported. Please join us in celebrating Zequin Lee for her exceptional contributions, her inspiring work ethic, and her unwavering commitment to the community. We are very proud to honor you as the DOS October 2024 Employee of the Month.
Good morning, everyone. May I say something?
Yes, yes, please.
Good morning, everyone. I am wearing a mask not because of COVID. It's because last week I accidentally broke a front tooth when I was biting on a delicious pork rib. I should have been more careful if I would know of such an opportunity here where I really hope to show my beautiful smile. Thank you so much, Executive Director Dierman, DAS Commission, and everyone who nominated and voted for me for this award. I'm truly honored and humbled to accept it. For those who don't know, this is my first job with the city. Shortly before I started, a former coworker gave me parting advice at my farewell. She said, "Be prepared. People working at the city are mean." After joining the Office of Community Partnerships, or OCP, I quickly found that my colleagues were incredibly welcoming. Whenever I had a question, I always received very kind assistance and advice. Some even dropped by my cubicle to check if I needed help. It didn't take me long to enjoy this inclusive, supportive, and collaborative work environment. It made me wonder, is this what mean people look like? I want to express my very deep gratitude to my leaders at OCP, our director, Mike Yak, and also my former supervisor, Melissa McGee. They provided me with essential training and hands-on support, enabling me to perform my duties effectively. They gave me the opportunity to explore my strengths and also always listen to my thoughts. Furthermore, on an instance I remembered, when I was working hard to meet several deadlines, Mike encouraged me to take time off afterward, showing his genuine care for my well-being. I'm also deeply grateful for the privilege of working under the leadership of the Deputy Director, Cindy Kaufman, on contracts associated with Cal Lane. Cindy provided me with support and guidance in helping me navigate the challenges associated with those contracts, which I really appreciate. My heartfelt thanks also go to my colleague, Rose Tacchini, who continually inspires me to be a better communicator, a more critical thinker, and a more thoughtful person. In conclusion, I love what I do every day because my leaders and my colleagues are far from mean. My dedication stems from the inspiring environment at OCP, along with the trust, respect, and care I receive from my leader. My accomplishment wouldn't be possible without their unwavering support and guidance. Everyone at OCP is talented and committed, and I am simply one of them. I'm extremely fortunate and honored to be the one being recognized this month. I want to take a moment to express my heartfelt appreciation for my leaders at my previous job, Deline Rankin and Yvette Robinson, who believed in me, raised me up, and played an instrumental role in helping me build the foundation of my career. And finally, I want to extend my sincere gratitude to all those within and beyond OCP who I have had the privilege of working with and learning from, as well as my families and friends. And above all, I give thanks to God. Thank you all.
Thank you. Commissioners, item 7 is the Advisory Council report presented by Advisory Council President Diane Lawrence, who is joining us via WebEx today.
Good morning, Commissioners. Executive Director Dearman, I apologize for not being there, but I think I have a slight flu shot reaction, so thought it best to stay in. Want to congratulate the Employee of the Month. The Advisory Council met. I have two reports, one on August and one on September. So met on August 21st. As always, Executive Director Dearman gave a department update. the nominating committee discussion was held referencing the 2022 updated bylaw provisions. There are four officers that we are looking for to fill the roles president, first vice president, second and vice president, and secretary. And we will, the nominating committee will be voted on at the October meeting. The LGBTQ plus report included a discussion of the use of Waymo by the LGBTQ plus communities. Project Open House's new building on Market Street will be a 55-unit building with mental health services planned for the first floor of the building. And the project will double the number of units currently provided by Open House and will be open to all members of the community. there's still CSL vacant priorities and updates. And there were some updates by the members of the council. We met again in September at our usual meeting. And again, Executive Director Dierman gave us a thorough department update, which included updates on the department's annual report. The link to the annual report has been sent to all the advisory council members. And Executive Director Dierman mentioned that accessibility was being added to diversity, equity, and inclusion goals. She mentioned that there would be training given to staff, and then question was asked about whether that would be available to the community, to a broader group of folks. And the council had volunteered to be the focus group for that training going forward. Basically, it was a bit of a selfish part, volunteering on our part so that we got the training as well. We were given an update on the resource guide, as well as information on C4A strategic planning on the California Older Americans Act. We were told that the virtual programs at the Disability Cultural Center are going well. And we again got an update from the LGBTQ plus report from Dr. Edelman. And the survey has been delayed, awaiting the state's sign-off. There have been focus groups, including BIPOC and rural communities, as part of this, and they've pointed to the need in rural communities for living situations or models similar to the village model, where neighborhoods and groups of people watch out for each other. The challenge there is going to be how to organize it. And member, advisory council member Morningstar Vancell mentioned about the new LGBTQ plus flag that was raised in honor of Gabriel Baker on September 13th. Council member Vancell represents District 8, and Supervisor Mandelman called her out for her work that's being done on the council. There was a site visit report, and I've included most of that in my report. This was at the Stonestown YMCA Senior Annex. The YMCA in Stonestown has two locations. One is on 333 Eucalyptus, which is the Y's main building where most of their activities are, their weight machines, the pool, the gym, a lot of their, some of their child care programs. The annex, which is on 20th Avenue, right around the corner, across the street and around down the block a little bit, that's where all the senior programs are. And the site has many rooms. It's the old office building for Stoneston Development Corporation, including exercise, group activities, congregate meals, health screening. Site is used during the summer months and sometimes during the vacation periods for children that are gathering before their offerings. Full disclosure, I did this report, and I'm also a member of the annex. I attend their exercise programs a couple of days a week. I interviewed the executive director, the director of senior services, Danielle Fuentes, and Danielle and I had a lively discussion. I've gotten to know her over the course of a little over a year in my participation. There are a wild, the programs that are offered at the Annex are funded by DOS, and they are very clear. Every piece of collateral material they put out has DOS prominently noted. There's, as I say, a wide variety of services. When I did the report in July, there were two exercise classes every morning. Starting this past Monday, on the 30th of September, on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, there are now three classes a day in the morning. They've added a class on Wednesdays, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So there's been some adjustment of time. All of them end between 10:45 and now 10:50. So that allows for the lunch program to move forward. There used to be congregate meals. Now they're primarily grab and go. And this, in my discussion, was a bit of a concern because the lunch program used to be a great bridge between exercise and the afternoon sessions. So there has been a drop off of some of the participation. They're hoping that there's a way to bring back the congregate meal, and I'm pretty sure that they're working with DOS on that. During those congregate lunch programs, they'd oftentimes have guest speakers on health and other topics. The meals are brought in each day by OnLock, and the participants need to let the site know about 2 days ahead of time, so the proper counts are there. They serve between 40 to 50 meals per day, and about 10 to 15% of the folks stay afterwards for an activity. Before the pandemic, the staying rate was at about 75%. They recently had a workshop at 11 a couple of weeks ago on scams. They offer health screenings every the third Thursday of each month, and weekly activities include things like regular movies, field trips, a ukulele workshop, bridge, tai chi, taiko, mahjong, and there are at least two or three activities every afternoon between 12:30 and 4. And in Stonestown Shopping Center area, once a month, the San Francisco Marin Food Bank comes, and volunteers from the senior annex can help with the meal prep, the bag preparation and distribution. Monthly calendars are always available with all of the activities, the lunch menus posted. There's always a recipe for each month, which are quite interesting, although I haven't tried any of them. Park Merced Housing Complex, about a half a mile away, also has an exercise program, but none of the other activities. Currently, three staff members serve about 1,800 independent clients. And when I looked at the website, I had looked at the website a number of times as a Y member. I found that it's very easy to use. There's a navigation bar at the top that has adult and senior, drop-down menu with all the Y sites. I click on the Stonestown link. I get all of the programs with days, times, field trips. I can access the food menus. There's information on both virtual and on-site classes. It's easy to access the virtual classes for seniors. There's a link for the team of staff. They are listed with their photos and with phone numbers. And as we've discussed before, that is a concern that we've raised with other sites. The branch addresses are available, but it does take a couple of clicks. There's a language drop-down menu, which has been fixed since I was there, according to Alex, who is the analyst from DOS who works with the Y. Could not change the font size. There was no information on disability, accessibility, and I forgot to discuss that with Danielle because she works very closely for all the sites and has a panel of seniors to make sure that the site is kept update and those suggestions are incorporated. Given the smallness of the site, I was impressed with how much is offered, the multi-functions, and the variety of programs, Communication is excellent. If there's a site that's closed, if a class is closed, you get that information. If there's a substitution, all that's made available. Everything was readily available. One of the things I want to point out, she also happens to be one of my favorite instructors. One of the instructors makes the DOS hub cards available for attendees and explains the purpose, citing your own experience with DOS. It's a very friendly atmosphere, very welcoming. When I wrote the report, there was a need for more space and exercise. And I noted that the staff was working on it, and obviously they fixed it. Stonestown is scheduled to undergo a major revamp over the next probably 15 to 20 years. They've just gotten approval for the plans, but it will take a while. It's a major shopping center that was built in the 1950s at the southwest end of the city. It's planned for about 3,000 plus units of housing and community village and stores and all of that. But the and there is some senior housing that's planned in the schematics, and the site's is slated to move at that time, but nobody knows when. And then there will be another, at least one or two more site visits before the end of the year reports. And then an exciting program, one of our members, Dr. Juliet Rothman, has reported on a new program that she's been working on with CLC on the sidewalk search program, coming out of the sidewalk search program. She's noticed that there are a lot of accessibility issues beyond tree roots and broken sidewalks. So she's working, as I said, with CLC and their connectors, and a new program has been developed called Accessibility Community. Detailed it in my report. They've met already with DPW, who are pleased with this new program, but have a, you know, caution that not everything will be fixed at once. They'll be training with the connectors, and one of our members, Darlene Ramlos, who is with the Mira Loma Connector Program, stepped up right away and is ready to work with Juliet, and both are quite excited on this. Another member is working with Leading Age on workshops with the San Francisco Law Consortium and working with people with dementia. And then we were alerted to the District 11 Cayuga Fall Fest on October 6th. And our next meeting is October 16th, where we will have our last, will be our, also our legislative update meeting.
Thank you. Commissioners, do you have any questions for President Diane Lawrence?
Just a quick.
Sure.
Please. Thank you for the thorough report, and it was like we'd gone on the site visit ourselves, and I know that I've visited because I think that's where we went for your, yeah. So anyway, it's a great center, and thanks for the comprehensive report. They seem like a model agency, so I don't mean this for a minute for criticism, but the fact that you've noted that there was a drop off with just people liking to get their to-go bags for lunch and then going back home is a challenge. And I'm kind of wondering if that's a challenge probably for other agencies. Mm-hmm. It makes kind of sense that that would happen. And I'm just going to note that if anyone is working on it, and it sounds like they are, that maybe that whatever solutions they come up with could become, again, a model for other agencies. And I don't know if this is a just something that happened at Stonestown, or it probably makes sense that it might have been other locations as well, but our nutritionists and such would know that more than I would. We just note that we've always really liked the idea that the congregate meal program is a way for people to learn about additional services and get that social contact. Yeah. So I just wanted to note that, but I'm kind of want this to be said in as positive way as I can, because it sounded like such an impressive program.
So, We can also ask that question mm-hmm. in our site visits. I'll bring that up with Juliet at the next meeting.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Because I think we have seen that in a number, and I don't know if, I'm not quite sure of all the reasons, but I know that in many of our site visits, when we talk, that getting people back to those congregate meals has been a bit of a challenge.
And sometimes it's just the things change. I don't mean to give up on this because it's really important, but also just noting that the pandemic changed so many things, and we started to see a positive with, the Zoom, that it actually encouraged people to stay involved and get additional services. So whatever there is that sort of makes it at least someone's getting a meal, and that maybe is just whatever they find out, I figure I kind of would trust this agency to evaluate it and maybe come up with an innovative solution around it. So just that. Thanks.
Great. Any other comments from commissioners? Thank you, President Lawrence.
Okay, commissioners, item 8 is a joint legislative council report presented by Diane Lawrence.
So we had, we didn't have a meeting. We were scheduled for a meeting in September, but we didn't have a quorum. For a couple of reasons, we still have to finish our investigation up. But nonetheless, the governor, as Executive Director Dierman mentioned, just had met the deadline of September 30th for passing, signing or vetoing bills. So there hadn't been much change. We will have a legislative joint ledge meeting on October 16th, or we will get the final updated list of where the status of the bills are, and that will be my report in November.
Okay, well,
and then we'll start all over again.
Rinse and repeat.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to that in the next month. You're up again, Robbie.
Commissioners, item 9 is the case report presented by Judith Dancer.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
So September, we had an in-person meeting, and that was at the Community Music Center. And that is also the people who oversee the older adult choirs. And we actually had a little voice experience with one of the teachers, and that was kind of fun to start the meeting off. Made a little lightness in the room, and we split up into groups. We had a small but mighty crowd, and we split up into advocacy, outreach, and networking, and the third one was, can't remember right now, should have written it down. Maybe it'll come back. So anyway, those were some things that we, education. So those are some things that we were discussing in different groups and feeding back to the center group. So that was really interesting. It was nice to see people in person. It's much easier to have conversations when you're not on Zoom. So that part was really good. And it was a glorious day. So, and for October, we have Gloria Bailey Ray, who will be talking to us about the Soroptimist International of San Francisco, and they work with girls and women to empower them through education. And I've actually had some connection with them in the past. They're great fundraisers, and I think they're just trying to connect more out in the community. And then we had a last minute addition of Anna from the National Single Payer and Movement to End Privatization of Medicare, and she will also be speaking. And then we are doing the one-time only funding, the behavioral health pilot called Support Circles that came out last week. Yay! And we are having the question and answer more information call on Thursday. So that will be very helpful to learn more and to make sure we're all on the same page. And I just want to thank Mike Zog and his team for working on this, because we're excited to see how that enters in the community. And a side note about your question, Martha. So in terms of Sequoia Living and the two senior centers, we do have congregate meals through Project Open Hand, but we still have to go. And it's just become part of the atmosphere, part of what happens. I'd say about 2/3 of the people stay in and the rest do to go. And we're talking, we do 60 meals for breakfast and 80 meals, sometimes up to 80 meals for lunch downtown and 60 at Aquatic Park. So it's changed slightly, but we are seeing more people coming back and eating and hanging out, and we're trying to provide more socialization right at that time so people connect more. We had the Olympics showing that went during the Olympics, and people were watching them together and talking about them. So, you know, how can we engage people more at the lunch?
A long show like that would engage people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments from the commissioners? Thank you very much for the update. I really appreciate it.
Okay, commissioners. Item 10 is general public comment, an opportunity for members of the public to address the commission on matters that are not on today's calendar. Are there any members of the public that would like to address the commission today?
Yes.
Okay. You have 3 minutes, and I'll let you know when 30 seconds comes up. All right, thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners and Executive Director Kelly. My name is Marie Jobling, and I'm here today representing the Dignity Fund Coalition. There are many important measures on the November ballot, but especially Proposition D and E on commission reform. These dueling measures will profoundly affect local democratic engagement in policy development and program oversight. After hearing from the representatives of both campaigns and reviewing their material, the Dignity Fund Coalition has taken a position of no on D and yes on E. At this point, we need to anticipate the chaos that might result if Proposition D passes. The Dignity Fund Coalition, in crafting the language for the charter amendment that created the fund, included language that assured general good planning through the community needs assessment, input from providers through the service provider working group, and transparency through the meetings and recommendations of the Oversight and Advisory Committee. All of this will be eliminated from the charter. We understand that these bodies, as well as many other commissions, will be ended in January, and the Dignity Fund functions will likely revert back to you as the DOS Commission. This action is not only an issue for the Dignity Fund implementation. Overall, it is abruptly ending scores of other government bodies that assure community engagement and transparency throughout city government. The list of charter implemented commissions and advisory groups that will end is extensive and includes others whose policies and programming is important to older adults and people with disabilities. To name a few, it includes the Health Commission, the Commission on the Status of Women, the Library Commission, the Immigrant Right Commission, Police Oversight, and so many more. So here's what we're asking you on what is a very short timeline. We ask your help in requesting a detailed overview of the impact and implementation timeline if Prop D passes. By your next commission meeting, you will know the results of the vote, and it will be important to plan how DOS, as well as the Dignity Fund Coalition, can prepare for the confusion that will ensue. We need to be better prepared because this measure basically represents disbanding commissions and advisory groups that have various constituencies, and we will all be competing with one another to still keep a place at the table. So we would appreciate any information that can be provided publicly by the city attorney and hope that you can provide a fuller briefing next month. We would urge San Franciscans to read the voter handbook and vote no on Proposition D and yes on
30 seconds left.
One last comment here. According to the Examiner, this is clearly a David and Goliath kind of measure. The Yes on D measure has approximately $8 million for their campaign, and No on D has $8 million. Yes on E has a paltry $21,500. So we do expect it may pass without a lot of grassroots support, and that's why we're here today to ask your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to address the commission? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their requests. Moderator, any callers in the queue? There are no callers. Thank you very much. That concludes that section. Commissioners, your next item is item 11, old business. Commissioners, please indicate by raising your hand if there's any old business that you'd like to discuss. No one? Okay. We can move to item 12.
Thank you. Commissioners, the next agenda item is item 12, new business. Items 12A and 12B are information only items that do not require a vote by the commission. Item 12A, Community Living Fund 6-month report, January through June of 2024. Information will be presented by Zinquin Lee. We'll present this item.
You can use that mic as well, too, if it's easier. You can use that microphone if that's easier.
Good morning again, Executive morning. Director Diemann. Good morning again, President Spears, Executive Director Diemann, and commissioners. Oh, I don't know why all of a sudden I'm very nervous. I'm Zinquin Lee, Program Analyst with Office of Community Partnerships at DAS. I'm presenting the Community Living Fund 6-month report covering January through June 2024. I made some last minute changes to my PowerPoint slides. I provided the updated hard copies, and this morning I just sent a updated PDF to Ravi, so I apologize for any inconvenience. The Community Living Fund for CLF was created in 2006 through a San Francisco ordinance to prevent institutionalization by supporting community placement alternatives and aging in place. A section of the San Francisco Administrative Code requires that DAS report the services and costs associated with CLF every 6 months. My report today will be fulfilling this requirement. The CLF program, or CLFP, is managed by Institute on Aging, or IOA. The program aims to reduce unnecessary institutionalization with two populations of focus, including nursing facility residents transitioning to the community and individuals in the community at risk of being institutionalized. The program employs a two-pronged approach of coordinated case management and purchase of services. The CLFP encompasses four key components: the traditional CLFP services, the Public Guardian or PG Housing Fund, DAS Enhanced Care Management or ECM, and DAS Community Supports or CS. All components align with the two populations of focus and the two-pronged approach. The DAS ECM and CS components are funded by the San Francisco Health Plan or SFHP through the CalAIM initiative. ECM began in July 2023, while CS launched in June 2024. Both components together provide SFHP members with the services that are similar to those offered through the traditional CLFP services. These two components generate revenue that helps offset the city's general fund expenditures. Separate from, but in partnership with CLFP, the Scattered Site Housing and Rental Subsidy Administration, managed by Brilliant Corners, is also funded by the CLF. The program offers housing options and rental subsidies for eligible individuals, enabling them to live in the community with appropriate support. The CLFP utilizes two data systems, Pace Care Online, or PCO, and Case Care, which are currently coexist. PCO is used for ECM and CS services. Case Care manages the documentation of the traditional intensive case management, or ICM, and purchase of services. Further development of PCO is needed, especially with the upcoming migration of case care data to PCO. During the recent reporting period, The main challenge faced was the difficulty in reporting performance measures due to the data being distributed across different systems. This complexity was further compounded by the data transition during the launch of ECM. The CLFP received a total of 306 new referrals during the recent period, which was a similar volume to the prior period and significantly higher than historical trends. 85% of these referrals were made by SFHP for ECM services. 15 came from the community for the traditional ICM services. Despite the high number of referrals, only 17% were enrolled in services. A key issue was that most SFHP members were not informed that a referral had been made on behalf of them. This led to the DAS and CLFP staff making cold call outreach to the referrals, resulting in many individuals declining services or being unreachable. These individuals were then classified as ineligible due to the lack of engagement. Referrals for white individuals saw an increase compared to the prior reporting period, comprising the largest share at 31%, though this remains below historical long-term trends. Referrals for black individuals declined following a spike in the prior period, representing 21% of total referrals. Referrals for Latino individuals remained steady at around 10%, but still fell short of historical levels. Meanwhile, there was a significant rise in referrals for individuals whose race or ethnicity was not identified, reaching 20% of all the referrals during this period. During this six-month period, the CLFP provided services to 308 unique clients in total. Of these, 226 clients, or 73%, received coordinated case management services, including 136 through ECM and 90 through traditional ICM services. 92 individuals, accounting for nearly 30% of the overall CLFP caseload, were supported by the scattered site housing and rental subsidy program managed by Brilliant Corners. Overall, service levels increased by approximately 10% from the prior period, continuing a recent upward trend, though they remain below historical trends. The most common services requested were in-home support, accounting for 60%, and case management, 53%. Additionally, requests for home repairs or modifications, housing-related services, and assistive devices were also common in the period. These service needs data reflected only the information from ICM referrals. DAS and the CLFP made efforts to expand outreach and promote equitable access to resources. The CLFP and DAS intake collaborated to improve the ECM outreach process, extending the time frame for the CLFP to establish more direct contact with clients. DAS requested SFHP to increase the monthly referral numbers with more warm referrals. Warm referrals are those where an identified referent exists and or SFHP has already made contact with the client. An area of focus will be continued relationship building with skilled nursing facilities beyond Laguna Honda Hospital. The CLFP has hired an outreach coordinator to enhance access through community education and outreach initiatives via various channels. The CLIP partnered with Open House to engage the LGBTQ plus community and provide staff training. The CLIP also reached out to Veterans Administration to promote purchase of services. During this six-month period, the CLIP expenses saw a net increase of $353,828 compared to the prior period. The average monthly program cost per client was $2,378, reflecting a modest reduction of $35 per month from the previous period, aligning with recent historical trends. Home care, assisted living, and general rental assistance accounted for the largest share of the purchase of services costs. Excluding these, the average monthly cost for other purchased services was $109, which represents an increase of $7 per month over the prior period. Due to technical difficulties in the claim process with SFHP for ECM services, claim submissions were significantly delayed. DAS began receiving CalNAM revenue for ECM services during this reporting period with an initial payment of $10,250 in June 2024, a substantially larger payment is anticipated in the next report. The revenue received will be used to offset the city's general fund expenditures again. Here are some other trends. Referrals from Laguna Honda Hospital are anticipated to increase in the next reporting period as their patient admissions has resumed following the hospital's recertification. The community options and resource engagement, or CORE team, continue to hold weekly meetings to facilitate and support clients transitioning from Laguna Honda Hospital to community living. The CLIP maintained its collaboration with Brilliant Corners to implement the integrated housing model, offering appropriate housing opportunities along with rental assistance and supportive services. The CLIP and Public Guardian worked together to identify new referrals and promote purchase of services for eligible clients. I would like to extend my sincere appreciation to the following individuals for their valuable contributions or support in the preparation of this report. Aditi Valor, Genevieve Pereira, Cindy Kopman, Fanny Lappington, Nancy Peterson, Shelby Unger. Thank you all for your attention. Now I would like to open the floor for any questions.
Commissioners, are there questions regarding this six-month report or comments?
I have more comments than sure, the one please. Minor question. Ms. Lee, thank you very much for this very comprehensive report. Your PowerPoint presentation really summarizes the report very well, and it is well appreciated. I just want to make comments that I'm glad to see that there continues to be upward trend of the use of this program. I also pleased to see the noted efforts to promote access to service, such as the warm handoff referrals from the San Francisco Health Plan, so there is a more direct and successful connection to services. Speaking of outreach and connection, I noted in the last report the plan to hire an outreach coordinator. I noticed that this person is now in place. I was just wondering if there's any kind of update as to the progress of the work done by the outreach coordinator for this program.
The outreach coordinator, at first they hired one and then that person left the program. Oh. And they have hired another one. So we're having, the program is having an outreach coordinator right now.
Okay, and so it still hasn't gotten in place yet. Is that correct? So you have to hire someone new and they're just starting So they
just started, okay. And then yeah, hope to see more like increase in the enrollment of the services due to the work of this outreach coordinator.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking that question is I note that there, again, in the last report, there was efforts to connect with the API community as well as the LGBTQ plus community. And I just want to ensure that progress is still being made in both of those areas through the work of the outreach coordinator as well as ongoing meetings with the various community groups.
I really appreciate your attention to this. And outreach to API community hasn't been stopped. It's continued. And I just, it's my fault. I haven't highlighted here in this report.
No, it's not. It's fine.
And it's important.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's
so
very important.
I might ask a question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate
great.
That.
Then as far as minor question, I note under talk, I noticed that there's still kind of a transition going on between the different data collection, different systems being used, and perhaps we don't have all the data that we would like to support what's the results of this program. What I did note is in terms of ethnicity, that there are like 20% of unknown ethnicity. I was just wondering the reason behind that high percentage of unknown race and ethnicity.
So the reason why there are more unknown race and ethnicity, my initial thought is because of the large number of referrals from San Francisco Health Plan for ECM services. So since a lot of referrals were not made with clients' knowledge about that. So the referral data from there lacks the information for the race and ethnicity. So,
I see. Okay, thank you. Okay, so.
Excuse me, I would like to add. Usually, when we start to reach out to the clients and we start the services, the CLFP will start to collect the demographic information. But the information we collected later doesn't count as the referral information. So the demographic information here talking about is the referral information.
I see. It's more
separate process.
It's two separate things. It's more referral.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying. Okay.
You're welcome.
So I'm pleased that the work continues to be progressing well, trends are up, and I'm glad that there is continued efforts to improve the utilization and outreach and connecting to this program. So thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Very helpful and important. Any other questions?
Sure.
Good morning, Ms. Lee. I noticed that in the efforts to promote access through the various services, one thing that's kind of sticks out to me is that when it comes to the veterans, the only comment was that you guys are going to reach out to the Veteran Administration to promote purchase of services. So everybody gets services for free, but the veterans need the VA to actually pay for it. Any reason behind that?
I understand the question, and probably many other people also have the same question. So for the CLFP coordinated case management services, it's a payer of last resort. And then for Veterans Administration, they provided a lot of services and resources. If there is an area that VA is providing, then CLFP doesn't provide those duplicate resources. And then for purchase of services, it doesn't only apply for VA clients. And it's in general, so the program identified that the purchase for services may be the most helpful for the VA populations. So let me see whether I made my point. So the okay. So Could you please say your question again? Like you mentioned purchased and pay. Clarify your question again, please. Sorry.
Take your time.
Huh?
Take your time.
Clarify your question is what she's asking.
Is that what I was understanding? And then, so this would be a program that would fill in where...
You want to speak?
Yeah, if I was following you, you're saying that the veterans have resources to some extent for these services. Where they don't, this program fills in?
Yes.
So does that, is that getting to your question?
I think in most cases, you know, the veterans actually qualify for all of the above anyway. Because then they fall into various groups.
True. I mean, that would be right. But I'm also, like, it's a little bit different in the sense of veterans having funding for some of these, and somebody else that's not a veteran may not have funding for anything. So, but I was kind of understanding it that way in your response, but if that wasn't complete.
Yeah, let me ask the question this way. So are the veterans only... do they only have access to the purchase of service goods, or are they also available for all the other services that are listed on here? Because I took it that one was just called out, but they have access to ECM and everything else. Is that correct, or is that incorrect?
Yes, you are correct. I am sorry for the confusion. So the veterans population qualified. Well, the same as general population qualify for the services of the program. The reason why I highlight the purchase of services was because the program staff member, they mentioned that a lot of cases, sometimes one, maybe VA already are aware of the general case management services, and not a lot of them know of the purchase of services, so they put some efforts there to promote that services to make it better known to the population. And yeah, they qualify for other services as well. Other services are available for veteran population if they eligible.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did that help?
So this would be in addition to.
Okay. Yeah, in addition to. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry for the confusion.
No, it's no problem.
I have one question. Thank you for the report. And I just had a question about the program costs, because it says that your costs increased $353,000 over the prior six-month period. And at the same time, the average monthly cost per client actually went down. And so I'm wondering, what was driving that significant change in that from the prior 6 months? Was it the number of program participants significantly increased? And if so, or however that, whatever drove the increase, was that absorbed within your budget?
Yes, it's still within our budget. And then in the prior period, there was a drop in the program expenses. Largely due to the short of staff, low expenses in staff salaries and fringe benefits at that time, and then the CLFP has hired 5 new staff members, including 1 program supervisor and 4 case managers, and so during this period, both the CLFP and DAS salaries and fringe is part of a big part of the increase. And then let me see whether I have any other information to add.
So it sounds like you were somewhat understaffed in that prior six-month period, so you're actually filling in positions that were budgeted and just were open in the first 6 months.
I'm so sorry.
It sounds like you were understaffed, so you were actually spending under your budget because of your staffing levels, because you hadn't filled, there were certain open positions that hadn't been filled. So and that kind of explains the jump from the prior 6 months in your spending?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I am not sure. I completely understand your question.
Right, well, so from what you said, it sounded like you hired a number of people. So you were paying less for staffing overall, you know, for the employees. And you filled those positions in this 6 month period that we're looking at here, and that explains the increase in the cost in your spending.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Correct.
That's great.
And also, the operating expenditures of all the CLIP associated services also increased a little bit. Yeah, during this period.
Inflation.
Thank you for the clarification. I got it. Thank you.
I have one.
Any other
questions? I have one revenue question. What do we anticipate after the backlog of, I'll call it, being reimbursed for or receiving CalAIM revenue? Understand that there's a backlog and we only received $10,000 in June. What do we anticipate for, with the dollars that we spend, how much do we anticipate we're going to get back from CalAIM? Do you have any idea? Do we have any idea how much money we are expecting from CalAIM? Or do we just need to wait until next? Yeah, I see. Yeah. The money person.
The money person. Here.
I think we're still projecting out that number. We are at a significant amount already. I think we are at most recently over $275,000 has come in from this program. We expect that to grow as we improve systems, figure out billing and things like that. Our top number is still a little.
275 over a 6 month period or 275 annually or just.
This is just over the past how many months? This is just over the past few months, so revenues are ramping up. We're getting better at harvesting those dollars and bringing them in. Our top number, we're going to need more time to figure that out.
Okay. I think that's something we'll look forward to seeing, how the revenue that's coming in from this innovative program from the state is actually offsetting the actual costs that we have from the city budget, because I think that would be interesting for us to understand. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lee. This is a wonderful conversation. Glad it was informational only.
Thank you very much.
We still read the report. Okay, our next item.
No, we still have to do public comment.
Oh, yes, public comment.
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on agenda item 12A?
I'm so glad there was this moment.
Your time's going to start now. You have 3 minutes.
Okay. Marie Jobling, this time representing the Community Living Campaign where I work. I just wanted to provide a piece of history. It's so impressive, the report that you got today about the growth of the Community Living Fund, the way it has been able to partner and leverage other kinds of dollars, the types of services that are provided is most impressive. And the piece of history is that the idea from this came from the San Francisco Long-Term Care Coordinating Council. The idea, the language for the legislation, the actual campaign to sort of get it into reality, and actually the meeting with then Mayor Gavin Newsom to secure the funding. And I think it's a good example of if you involve community and you tap their ideas and their energy around a good idea that's needed at the community, all things are possible. So as we're on the brink of losing a lot of that, I just want to hold this up as an example of how it really works. Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to comment? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment on agenda item 12A. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their requests. Moderator, are there any callers in the queue? There are no callers. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep.
Commissioners, our next item is also informational. Agenda item 12B, a presentation of the DAWS fiscal year 24-25 schedule for request for proposals. I don't want to pronounce these names incorrectly. I know Erica Maybaum, but how do I pronounce your name, sir?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners and executive director, dear men. My name is Tahir Sheikh. I'm a senior contract manager from Human Service Agency, contract department. With me, my colleague, Erica Mebum, program analyst from DAS, Office of Community Partnership. We are here this morning to present the fiscal year 24-25 request for proposal schedule. Every year, contracts and program staff work together to develop this schedule. This schedule gives an overview of what we are working on, and program and contract will bring in to the DAS Commission for approval. Now I will pass on to my colleague, Erica, to start with an overview of four-year dignity fund cycle and overview of the planned RFPs. Thank you.
Good morning, President Spears, Commissioner, and Executive Director Dearman. As Tahir said, my name is Erica Maybaum. Am I cut off from public comment?
No.
Program analyst for the Office of Community Partnership. Partnerships. While the colors on the slide might be slightly different, I'm guessing this is a slide you're pretty familiar with. I'll walk through the RFPs that are calendared to be released in the next few slides, but wanted to back up a little for just some context. On the slide, the CNA is the community needs assessment. The CNA is a process we go through data, including surveys and focus groups, to understand the needs of the community and where there may be gaps. The CNA informs the priorities for allocations, and to inform this process, it was conducted in fiscal year 21-22. It will be conducted next fiscal year to inform the next planning cycle. The SAP, the Service Allocation Plan, is informed by the needs assessment and is how the department plans to allocate funding as we look at the following 4 years. The fiscal year where you will be awarding contracts this fiscal that fit within Group C, the mint green on the slide, nutrition and wellness, and self-care and safety. Aligning contracts into four-year cycles is for the purpose of easing administrative burden and also the number of contracts that we bring to you as commissioners. It puts grantees into longer grants, which creates stability and a longer planning cycles, which allows for growth and development of the programs. It also allows us to focus on different areas each year. The RFPs that will be released are for contracts that are set to expire in June 2025. You will see in the next few slides that the RFPs will be released in the coming months so that we are ready to set and start a majority of the new four-year grants in July of 2025. I'm going to quickly run through the calendar, which lists the RFP, the month of release to the public, and the month we plan to bring the contracts to you, to the DAS Commission. Although the dates are tentative, the department will really try to stick to the schedule as much as possible. A majority of these programs are not new, but existing programs that are expiring and require a new procurement. All of these RFPs are set to fund really incredible services, and I'm happy to answer any questions, but for the sake of brevity, I'm just going to highlight one or two per slide. So on this slide, I'd like to highlight the in-home support services contract mode. You may be familiar with the more common IHSS IP mode, which is the independent provider, such as a friend or family member. However, this contract will be awarded to an agency which will be responsible for the hiring, the training, and the monitoring of the in-home support services workers. This contract generally serves those clients with higher needs whose friends or family member doesn't have the expertise to provide the service. They may be unable to manage their own caretaker for a variety of reasons, including more complex medical or mental health conditions. So moving on to the next slide, I wanted to highlight the first one, cultural humility training in service to LGBTQ plus community. So the reasoning behind this request for proposal is to raise awareness of the unique aging and health issues for LGBTQ plus community and barriers to services for these consumers. We want this population to access services and agencies to serve the queer elders competently, because when services are not provided in a welcoming or competent manner, there will be a lack of engagement, which leads to poor health outcomes, including isolation and other detrimental effects. Our goal is that all clients can have the least restrictive and functional independence and have access to services in a welcoming environment. This grant will provide multilingual cultural humility trainings to social service agencies and residential providers, such as long-term care facilities and assisted livings. The provider of this grant will work with agencies and demonstrate ways to overcome some of these barriers. I wanted to highlight the first two on the list. Together, congregate meals and home-delivered meals are the two largest nutrition programs with an annual awarded amount totaling about $25 million. For congregate meals, clients receive hot meals and eat at the program together, but they also have the option to take a to-go meal. They are culturally responsive programs, which currently include Russian, Chinese, Latin, Southern, and Samoan meals. Clients can go to a variety of sites throughout the city, and some serve breakfast and dinner, but most serve lunch. For home-delivered meals, it's also a comprehensive program procuring meals throughout the city in all districts. Culturally relevant meals include kosher, Russian, Chinese, and Latin. Again, breakfast and lunch, and most serve dinner, or most deliver breakfast and dinner, and many deliver lunch. On this next slide, I wanted to highlight the Elder Abuse Forensic Center and High-Risk Self-Neglect Multidisciplinary Team. This is an RFP put out by APS, Adult Protective Services. The team is made up of experts, including legal services, geriatricians, psychologists, law enforcement, and APS workers. The members of this team are people who can provide insight on abuse, whether it's physical, such as battery, or over or under medication, medicating, physical restraint and or by meds, or sexual abuse. It also includes financial exploitation or neglect. This team will meet and discuss was there in fact abuse and what needs to be done in order to make it a safe environment. For the self-neglect aspect, rather than coming from the outside, this is someone that is unable to do self-care, which can include not paying bills, not paying their mortgage, which could lead to homelessness, hoarding, living in squalor, and or the inability to get their medication. A case is submitted to the multidisciplinary team organizer, which will be the grantee. These meetings are not open to the public and only specific agencies are allowed, which is dictated by the state. I'm going to turn it back to Tahir to wrap up the presentation, and then we can answer any questions.
So in slide 3 to 7, you will see the RFP release date and commission tentative date. There are 24 RFP items this year. Last year, we had 25 items. We are planning to start RFP earlier so we can finish the commission in May. This is to allow time for contract modification and setup. Slide number 7, this is a list of sole source for fiscal year 24-25. There will be one sole source program for fiscal year 24-25. This concludes our presentation. We are available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Commissioners, do we have questions regarding our schedule for the next year? I have just one. April looks like a busy commission month. Just a comment.
Don't be planning your vacations around.
I think I might be on vacation.
Any other questions or comments regarding our schedule, our upcoming schedule for 24-25? Thank you both very much, and I love having this plan going forward.
Thank you.
It's really great to know what's a
public.
Yep. Robbie?
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on agenda item 12B? Moderator, please open the phone line for callers, and we'll give one moment for callers in the queue. Moderator, are there any callers in the queue? There are no callers. Thank you very much.
Okay, so hearing no further comments, we'll close public comment. Commissioners, our next item is item 12C. 12C, requesting authorization to modify the existing grant agreement with Project Open Hand for the provision of home-delivered meals and nutrition assessment for adults with disabilities during the period of October 1st, 2024 through June 30th, 2025 in the additional amount of $139,517 plus a 10% contingency for the revised total not to exceed $982,361. Leah Walton will present this item.
Good morning, Commissioners, President Spears, and Executive Director Dearman. My name is Leah Walton, and I'm a nutritionist for DOS, and I'm seeking the Commission's approval to modify the grant agreement for Project Open Hand for their Adults with Disabilities Home-Delivered Meal Program. In this current contract cycle, three agencies were originally funded to provide home-delivered meals to adult with disability consumers. One of the three agencies terminated their contract with DOS as of June 30th, of this year, and that agency was serving about 100 clients at the time they exited their contract. The two remaining service providers agreed to absorb those clients into their program starting in June to prevent service disruptions. You may have noted that we have only increased the contracted UDC by 2 in this modification, bringing Project Open Hand's total UDC to 90. This is because the enrollment in Project Open Hand's HDM program had been less than anticipated for the past couple years due to reasons outside of their control. Prior to Project Open Hand transitioning the impacted clients to their program, they served an average of 33 clients per month in fiscal year 24. Their contracted UDC was 88, so they had capacity in their contract to accept clients without significantly increasing their contracted UDC. The addition of 2 more UDC to reach a total of 90 is reflective of their maximum capacity with their current staffing levels. And with a contracted UDC of 90, they will be positioned to accept some clients from the HDM waitlist as well. Project Open Hand service trends over the past 14 months show that they provide approximately 28 meals per client per month in their HDM program and are projecting those service levels will continue through fiscal year 25. However, their current contract only supported 15 meals per month per contracted UDC, and this misalignment had not been of significant consequence to the agency before because they were not reaching their contracted UDC capacity. But with the absorption of these additional clients plus potential to take the clients from the wait list, they're expecting to reach their UDC capacity in fiscal year 25 and therefore will need to increase their units of service. The additional funding of $139,517 will support about 13,400 more meals, averaging 28 meals per client per month. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Commissioners, are there questions regarding this modification or
really,
comment?
Really quick question. What was the agency that declined to...
To continue?
Yes.
Self-help for the elderly.
Yeah, just curious for the record. Yeah.
Any other comments regarding this item? Public comment?
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on agenda item 12C? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment on agenda item 12C. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their requests. Moderator, are there any callers in the queue? There are no callers. Thank you very much.
Hearing no further requests to speak on this item, we will close public comment. Is there a motion from the commission to approve this item?
So moved.
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Secretary, will you please take a roll call vote?
President Janet Weiss Spears, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Nelson Lum, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Martha Knutson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Wanda Jung, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Commissioner Linda Parker Pennington, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thanks. We have a unanimous vote.
Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Walton. Are there any other announcements from the commission or the commissioners? So, not hearing any other comments, please stay cool, go to hydrate, and the meeting is adjourned.